This is Side Podcast episode 29, Hungry GP. Everyone wants to hear about today's events, but we really need to go back in time a little bit.
Oh, yes.
The perils of having a weekly podcast, especially this season.
It's been a hell of a week.
Things change on a daily basis. So bear with us. We're going to take you back on a magical journey through time. The Tuesday following last week's podcast, FIA President Max Mosley sent the spy case to the Court of Appeal after our good friend Luigi Macaluso was critical of the World Motorsport Council's ruling not to penalise McLaren. He wrote a letter to Mosley saying, "We find it quite difficult to justify how a team has not been penalised while it has been found in breach of Clause 151C of the International Sporting Code." Mosley in turn wrote a letter back saying, "Your letter suggests that the outcome would have been different if the council had given Ferrari further opportunities to be heard beyond those that were in fact offered. Because of this and the importance of public confidence of the outcome, I will send this matter to the FIA Court of Appeal." In answer to that letter, Ferrari said, "Yay!" and McLaren said, "Boo." The hearing is due to be held in Paris at the end of August. For whatever reason, Ferrari wanted to keep press interest in this matter, and they released an absolutely pointless statement, basically just rubbing McLaren's nose in it.
Yeah, I think it basically said, "We appoint our team boss to represent us in court," which, you know, like they were going to ever appoint anyone else. Let's be honest.
Unsurprisingly, Ron's patience snapped.
And didn't it snap?
He sent out a 5-page document directly to Macaluso. He objected to the previous letters being published on the FIA website without him having any say at all. The document went on to accuse Ferrari of winning the Australian GP with an illegal car.
Ouch.
And claiming that they were trying to tarnish McLaren's reputation with their false reports.
Which actually probably has some merit.
He claims that Stepney is acting as a whistleblower and that he informed them of the illegal devices at the beginning of this season.
Ooh, now that's a statement in itself, isn't it?
Yes.
Go on.
He explains that McLaren didn't protest publicly and simply requested clarification, which he thought was good sportsmanship. Mm,
it was, actually, because he could have made an awful lot of fuss, as certain teams did with the BAR fuel tank saga, whereby, you know, there was a lot of public interest in
spread it across the media.
Absolutely. They chose to keep quiet and to wait until the weekend was over and then request clarification, which they did. And the FIA basically said, no, that device is illegal.
He continues to assert that the team knew nothing of the Ferrari documents and the Stepney affair is an entirely separate matter. He says Ferrari had more than enough chance to get their message to the World Motorsport Council. They submitted an 118-page document that he labels grossly misleading.
118-page document. Let's just keep that in perspective. How many words? Did they use a very big typeface or something?
It's a lot of words.
Or was it drawn in crayon? How do you write 118 pages? Goodness me.
And McLaren only saw it 2 days before the hearing, giving them little time to correct the inaccurate content, whilst much of the information was leaked to the Italian media before they could do anything about it.
Blimey.
He concludes that as Ferrari had plenty of opportunities in the hearing and Jean Todt himself gave evidence, he doesn't understand why they should need to appeal. And he finishes up by saying that the recent events and press releases have damaged not only McLaren, but the entire sport. So basically bringing the sport into disrepute.
Ooh, and you've got to say the guy has a bit of a point, because there's no question about it. Ferrari are going over the top with their leaks to the press and their unnecessary press releases. And I think they snapped Ron, didn't they?
He broke.
And every word, if you read his 5-page document, every word is important. Everything he says has, you know, a lot of thought put into it. And he's obviously spent a lot of nights, you know, mulling over this issue. And he obviously decided to put pen to paper and he released this.
Macaluso responded.
Because that's exactly what you want to do, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You wind Ron up, so now you're going to have your say again.
Continue the conversation. Just let it lie.
Yeah. Seriously.
He just said there appears to be a difference between what McLaren was saying and what Ferrari was saying, so they should leave it for the World Motorsport Council to sort out.
Okay.
He didn't directly respond to any of the points.
Right.
And then Ron responded again with another letter, and he agreed that they should leave it to the FIA. So at least they agree on something.
So the letter writing is over now, is it?
I hope so.
Okay. Because, you know, our fax machines now ran out of ink. We may never know the conclusion of this.
Some people are actually trying to stay out of the matter. Ross Brawn said it has nothing to do with him. And Stepney has actually broken his silence to say that he is not a whistleblower.
That's interesting, because clearly Ron thinks that Nigel Stepney did alert them to the illegal flaw, which begs the question, is somebody else within Ferrari the whistleblower pretending to be Nigel Stepney the whistleblower?
Yeah, because McLaren think he is, and he says he isn't.
Yes.
So does that mean someone else is pretending?
Presumably they're getting emails from a Mr. Nigel Stepney, signed Mr. Nigel Stepney at Ferrari. And clearly Nigel Stepney thinks he's not sending those emails. So is there someone else still in Ferrari willing to leak information, one may ask?
And why did he go and meet Mike Coughlin?
Yes.
In Spain?
Well, that's true. That's a very good question. Because obviously Mike must have known if he met Nigel Stepney or someone else, because obviously he met him face to face. So that's an interesting angle.
Whilst they're trying to keep out of it, Briatore is sticking his nose in.
Well, again?
Still where it's not wanted and no one's asking for it.
Another week, another Briatore comment.
Exactly. He says, when we started developing the car for 2007, we maybe underestimated the big technical impact there would have been with the coming of Bridgestone as a sole tyre supplier in place of Michelin. But had I only known Ferrari's weight distribution or how big their tank is, if I had a bit of those documents, then we surely wouldn't be in this situation today. We would certainly have gained in performance. Dennis says he's immaculate, but it's hard to believe him.
Yikes! That's a bit of a scathing comment, isn't it? That's
well, they've never been friends.
No, but that's a direct accusation that the guy's cheating. I mean, just because their car happens to be faster than the Renault doesn't mean that they had inside information. It might have meant that they just lucked into a better performing or better balanced car, doesn't it? That seems to be taking liberties on Briatore's part.
There was also a quote from him that we saw on Autosport, but it was later removed. And he was talking about McLaren's supply of the ECU next year. He said, first of all, because they don't work on our cars, the cars don't even start up. Second, why should we send some of our data to McLaren?
Now, hold on a second. Didn't I say last week that that maybe the ECUs have been given out? I think I said that first.
You did.
The thing you have to say is, I mean, if you take someone else's ECU and put it on your car, it's not going to start the car without an additional bit of work. So, you know, other cars seem to be going okay with it. The Toyota went around the track in 2008 specification. Why can't Renault get the system to work?
He's being awkward,
isn't
he?
He's not trying, is he? And secondly, who said they had to send data to McLaren? I haven't heard anything about this. The first I've heard on that one.
In any other week, all this information would be a podcast in itself.
It really would. You could spend a whole week just on that one 5-page letter from Ron. It really is a mine of Formula One information, and we might have to come back to it in the future because it's just maybe the end of season review or something, because there's just so much information in there. If I encourage you, if you have nothing better to do, go to the FIA's website and download it and take a look at it. Mind-blowing.
And we'll do it if you have anything better to do. Still read it. It's important.
It really is important. As documents go, this is it's quite an important thing, really. And, you know, as a tipping point to this World Championship and also just in the history of Formula One, keep an eye on it.
But, unfortunately, this week we have to move on. There is actually a race to cover as well.
Oh, go on then.
In free practice one, the first 45 minutes saw very little action due to low grip.
Dusty track. Not used very often in this circuit, and it tends to kind of, all the dust can collect in like a little bowl at the bottom. And so it's not a good track to run on.
Mark Webber and Liuzzi both stopped on track, so not good for them. Liuzzi actually ended up a tenth slower than Vettel in 16th.
Vettel?
Yes, Vettel, because speed has been sacked or left or whatever.
He's left the team due to his comments the previous week, yes.
No, due to his performance.
Oh, sorry. I thought the fact he basically called his boss useless.
BMW Sauber released Vettel from his contract, so he's now with Toro Rosso till the end of the season, and he's been signed up for 2008 as well.
Blimey, the 2008 calendar is certainly taking shape, isn't it? There's almost going to be no movement left. Almost every available seat has been signed up and everyone's sorted. There's no silly season this year.
Kubica had a very late run on the super soft tyres, and he went fastest, followed by Massa and then Raikkonen. For free practice two, you were listening to Five Live, weren't you?
Brilliant coverage. For the first time this year, they're doing Friday practice. And I missed the first one because I kind of forgot about it. But I tuned into the second one. It was amazing. There was Morris Hamilton and Ian Phillips from Spyker. He had a fantastic bunch of stories to deliver. I mean, he had great F1 anecdotes, amazing insight into what was going on the track, and also loads of information on Spyker's troubles throughout the season. Loved it, every bit of it.
Didn't he say that Singapore is most likely to be a night race?
He said from his inside information, Singapore is going to be a night race next year. You heard it here second, people.
And he likes Friday testing, doesn't he?
He said something like it saved him about £4 million a year, so that's working out quite well. And spectators get better on-track action, less benign testing throughout the year.
During the actual session, there was some light rain towards the end. Lewis Hamilton ended his last run in the gravel.
He did have a big spin, and he tried to get the car out of it. And as he accelerated the track, he got beached on the gravel, dug himself in deeper, absolutely covered the track in gravel.
Oh, wonderful. Vettel was a tenth slower than Liuzzi this time, down in 20th. Yamamoto, also a new boy, he was 5 seconds off the pace and he had a spin, so not a good start for him.
No, not a great debut.
Fastest was Alonso, then Kovalainen, and then Hamilton. In free practice three, everyone did their fast times, and then they changed to the super soft tyres towards the end of the session, but they couldn't improve on their previous times.
And the super soft tyres, they were giving up after such a short amount of time, it was ridiculous. The guys were getting like a lap and a half out of them, and then they were just destroying themselves. They were eating themselves as they went around the track. And you ended up with, they obviously had the white stripes on them. Cars were coming in with no white stripes on them, completely burnt out.
Fastest in free practice three was Massa, then Alonso, and then Hamilton. In qualifying one, Hamilton did the quickest time of the weekend so far, so he was at the top. Then with 3 minutes to go, pretty much everyone actually, I think there was only one car out on track, everyone went into the pits. The top five were in the 1 minute 20, so that would be the usual four plus Heidfeld. And they didn't come out again. But right near the end, Kovalainen, Kubica, people like that, they all found some grip. So Heidfeld slipped down from 5th to 10th.
It was looking a bit kind of ropey for him at one point, wasn't it?
Although it didn't actually matter being the first qualifying session. It's not the first time that he stayed in the pits when he possibly should have come out again.
There was an unexpected amount of grip at that point in time.
Fisichella held up Yamamoto on his fast lap. It wouldn't have made any difference, but Fisichella was really pretty blatant about it.
He really did. He held up right at the very last corner. He pretty much slammed on his brakes to give himself some more space into the final straight, or possibly because the car in front of him, he kind of came across it at the last moment. I think it was a Red Bull car. And he was taken slightly by surprise, and unfortunately held up Yamamoto.
The fastest three were Hamilton, Kovalainen, and then Kubica. And out was Button, Barrichello, Sato, Vettel, Sutil, and Yamamoto. In Quali 2, after 4 minutes, there were still only five cars out, so they're really starting to leave it later and later.
And certainly this track where the grip improves, it's kind of like Monaco, where the grip just improves over and over, lap after lap after lap. So the more cars that can go out and put some rubber down, the better you are, and the later you can leave it, you know, the faster you're going to go.
Massa did a fast lap for 11th position.
Oh dear.
He started a second lap and then dived into the pits, but when he was leaving the pits, he stopped before he crossed the line. So the engineers had to run and push him all the way back down the pit lane. He was stopped for only a couple of seconds, and then he head off again. And there was chaos because someone dropped the tyres all over the pit lane.
It was a bit of a panic, and they kind of lost their cool a little bit, didn't they? Because the car, it obviously set off to do its final run, basically ran out of fuel, didn't it?
I think there was miscommunication
between the pit lane and the pit wall, at which point they were all flustered and it was all a bit chaos, and this guy kind of flew across the pit lane in his tyres, he kind of pulled one of those tyre trolleys behind him, swept round at a bit of an angle, they went flying, which is actually quite dangerous. If any cars were coming, drivers got hit on the head by bouncing tyres, and I'm surprised they didn't get a fine for that.
But no one got hurt, and it was quite funny. It was. All these little men rushing around picking up tyres.
Yeah, the cameras kind of only just caught it. You just saw the wheels of the tyre thing sort of go flying, and then it was just chaos and carnage. But Massa got out in the end, didn't he, with cold tyres.
Didn't do any better, though. The fastest three were Hamilton, Alonso and Trulli, whilst going out were Coulthard, Kovalainen, Wirtz, Massa, Davidson and Liuzzi. In Quali 3, Hamilton, as usual, led the queue at the front of the pit lane. He was followed by Alonso, which is unusual because he's usually waiting in the pits.
He is.
When they were let free, Alonso and Raikkonen were sort of scrapping on the circuit. Then it was time for the pit stops. Toyota's had a super quick pit stop turnaround. One car went out and the next car was like right there.
You know, that team, because they're not fighting for the top positions in a race, you often don't see a Toyota pit stop, but they are a well-oiled team when it comes to that kind of thing.
Alonso came into the pits and they seemed to hold him up for a long time. The lollipop man had the lollipop in front of him and was counting down on his fingers, 5, 4, 3, etc. And then when they went to lift the tyre warmers off, a string got caught round the front right, which delayed him even longer. But it seemed like weird behaviour holding him up in the pit box.
Yeah, it did. And I'll tell you what, Alonso deserves a bit of credit for that because he spotted the, you know, the guy lifted the lollipop. And Alonso, obviously, at that point should have gone. He spotted there was a problem with the front tyre warmer. He held the car where it was. I thought that was quite good, really.
Heidfeld went faster than Raikkonen.
The BMW is looking really good at this circuit.
Then it was time for more pit stops. Alonso came in and he was held up again for about 20 seconds. Hamilton queued up behind him and the lollipop was raised and Alonso didn't go.
He didn't. He sat there. The lollipop was raised. The team were kind of like waving him forward and he just sat.
So when they came out, there was like a minute to go or something. Mm-hmm. They came out, Alonso managed to get across the line in time to do another flying lap.
Only just. It was so close, he almost didn't make that line.
And then Hamilton, he did not.
No, he came about 4 seconds. Obviously, he was held up behind Alonso in the pit box, and that difference meant he couldn't do his final lap.
Alonso managed to get pole. So at the time, the grid was Alonso, Hamilton, Heidfeld, Raikkonen, Rosberg, Schumacher, Kubica, Fisichella, Trulli, and Webber. Ron looked absolutely furious when Hamilton missed out on that lap. He threw his headphones down. He grabbed Alonso's trainer or physiotherapist, whatever he is, by the scruff of the neck, marched him down the pit lane. It looked to all the world that Alonso was at fault. We couldn't hear radio traffic because McLaren, like Ferrari, they hide it from us, don't they?
They use encryption technology so that other teams can't listen in.
And neither can we.
And neither can we.
Initially, Alonso blamed the team. He said, "The team always decides when I have to get moving. I'm sorry for him, but I leave the pits when I'm told to." Then Hamilton said, "I'm not angry. I'm curious as to what's gone on, and I find it quite interesting and amusing."
Amusing.
Yeah, haha, very good funny. Word, yep. We had to wait ages to find out what had actually happened, and it turns out the stewards were investigating at the same time. During the media conference, Ron explained the whole situation. Normally, they dispatch cars to the pit lane as soon as they are up to temperature in order to gain track position.
So that they're right at the front of the queue of the pit lane, waiting for Q3 to start, right?
Yeah, due to the nature of qualifying, the first team at the head of the pit lane can squeeze in one more lap from one of their cars, which means they get to burn off an extra lap of fuel before doing their qualifying lap.
And it's important that you can only get that of one car, and when there's only one lap, there's only the car at the head of the queue.
And McLaren tend to alternate their cars. So this week it was Alonso's turn to be up front. Hamilton lost out on his turn last race because of the crash.
Yeah, presumably that was his turn to be at the front. And obviously the team made a mistake with the wheel gun. So I guess he kind of figured that maybe he was still owed one of those, you know, front of the queue kind of qualifying.
He ignored several direct orders to let Alonso pass, which might have upset Ron a little.
Might have, yes.
And it might have upset Alonso.
A fair bet, yeah. So Alonso obviously was behind him in the pit lane. He assumed as soon as he'd get to the first corner, Hamilton would let him through, and that didn't happen. So he might have been just a little bit irate in that cockpit.
And in order to redress the situation, Alonso was held up to help him gain back some track position.
Because basically he was out of position because of Hamilton's misdemeanour. Alonso was then out of track position. He needed to free up some space, kind of give him some kind of free air so that he could get his perfect qualifying lap in.
So it's important to make it clear that it's Hamilton's fault that Alonso is stuck in the pits.
Yes, and it's Hamilton's fault that the team had to hold Alonso up. And this will become important in a bit because the team decided to hold Alonso in the first instance for a number of seconds. And the reason for that is because he was basically out of position.
On the second time around, Alonso was again held because he was out of position.
He was still trying to find the best possible lap.
Still Hamilton's fault. Hamilton arrived behind him, and between Alonso and his engineer, they continued to discuss the tyres, even though the lollipop had been lifted.
So Alonso was being a bit naughty here. Obviously, he could see that in his head, he's pretty clever, actually, what he's done. He's worked out how much time he's got to finish his lap, and he's worked out that if the guy behind him is obviously going to be a few seconds late because he's got to have his tyres changed before he can go out. So he's kind of worked out exactly how long he needs to get his lap in, but without giving enough time to Hamilton for Hamilton to get a lap in. So it's been a bit sneaky, obviously discussing, do we want softs, super softs, you know, not the right time to discuss it, clearly. And it was definitely a deliberate attempt to scupper Hamilton's qualifier.
To clear up why he grabbed Alonso's trainer in such an ominous way, Ron said, "I took Fabrizio with me because I am only one person. I didn't know what level of temperature the drivers were going to be when they came out the cars, and I wanted Fabrizio to keep Fernando calm, and I was keeping Lewis calm. What we didn't want was things said in the heat of the moment that we would subsequently regret. We were both trying to calm both drivers down."
Yeah, although he did rip off the guy's headphones and then kind of push him all the way down the pit lane in a Vulcan kind of death grip.
Well, yeah.
You know, he had his hand around his neck and just pushed him. "You will come with me!"
But it also came to light, during his slowing down lap, Hamilton said some things to Ron on the radio.
Some things.
Yeah.
Some bad words.
Naughty words.
I can read them out to you. Obviously, this is a clean podcast, but do we have a beep machine here?
We do have a beep machine.
Are you ready on the beep machine?
Yes.
Okay. apparently, a slightly miffed Hamilton, who was obviously held up by Alonso and couldn't complete his lap, said to Ron over the radio, "Don't ever f*** that to me again." To which Ron Dennis replied, in an equally kind of irate way, "Don't ever f*** speak to me like that again," before Hamilton kind of signed off with a "go f- swivel."
Nice.
That kept you busy, didn't it? Apparently that was why Ron was throwing down his headphones on the pit wall.
But we should point out that the last person to swear at Ron Dennis was Montoya.
He didn't last very long, did he?
Didn't work out too well for him.
Oh dear.
And that's quite mean of Lewis, because Ron's always like supported him.
Ever since they've kind of met, Ron's put the money up and he supported him all the way, and then Lewis turns around and says that to him. Why didn't he just stick a knife in his heart and twist it? It'd hurt less.
But he was obviously angry, because in the press conference, Lewis was visibly shaking.
Good Lord.
Quite considerably.
Body language tells it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And he was quite, you know, a bit jumpy.
Nowhere near his usual calm self. Our hours later, the stewards came up with their decisions.
And my God, wasn't it hours later?
It really was.
It was almost the next day.
They gave Alonso a 5-place penalty, dropping him down to 6th and putting Hamilton on pole. They also said that McLaren would not be getting any constructors' points for this race. McLaren instantly put in an appeal, and that will be decided later this month, at the same time as the Spy appeal.
It's worth... How ironic. It's worth saying that they gave Alonso a 5-place drop because they didn't believe his story that he was talking about tyres, and they believed what he did was deliberate. So you could say there might be, you know, some merit in giving him that penalty. The reason they restricted McLaren's constructors' points was because they didn't believe that McLaren should be holding cars in the pit lane for 20 seconds deliberately in order to gain track position, and that was unsporting. I'm not sure I agree with that, to be honest with you.
They don't seem to have a problem when they keep Alonso in the garage at the beginning of the session, so
that's
it's the
a
same
good point.
Thing.
That's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that, and they've done that every race so far, and no one's raised an issue with that, and that's exactly the same thing. He's gaining track position by sitting in the garage. Is he going to be banned from doing that in the future? Good question.
We have had a couple of marvellous voicemails about this, though. Firstly, Jason.
Hi, this is Jason from Wakefield in the UK. Just thought I'd give my comments on the mess this weekend with Alonso and Hamilton. I think probably both drivers have been at fault this weekend. Stewards were probably right to dock Alonso the 5 places, given all that they could prove from the TV evidence. Downside of all of this is it robs us of a battle on the track. Anyway, I'm off to watch the Grand Prix now. Look forward to the show next week.
That seems like a fair comment. I mean, Hamilton is ultimately to blame because he kicked off the proceedings. He drives for a team that kind of relies on equality between drivers over and above everything else. They've always said that throughout the whole year. He knows this. And he threw it back in the team's face. It was bang out of order. But Alonso kind of reacted badly. He lost his cool. He should have let the team sort out the repercussions later on. And they would have. You know, they wouldn't have let Hamilton get away with what he'd just done.
And we also have a comment from Brendan.
Side podcast. This is my thoughts from boiling Atlanta. Innermost thoughts. Normally, I have to pay a therapist. Which McLaren driver am I siding with? Lewis Hamilton, of course. Were the team correct to do what they did? Absolutely not. After Ron's Delphic Oracle yesterday, I was convinced the man is desperately trying to keep a rattled Alonso on board more than anything else. What do I think of the stewards and their conclusions? They were perfectly correct for 2 reasons. What Hamilton did was to change the order a little during qualifying. No big deal if irritating to Alonso. What Alonso did was to deliberately, in front of the world's cameras, deny his teammate the chance to compete. Alonso cheated in public, expected the team to put up with it, and expected his teammate to put up with it. He then lied about it at the press conference, so he insulted my intelligence and ultimately armed his employer. If I were Hamilton, I would definitely have given Alonso a smack in the mouth, probably several. I think the FIA have been aware of teams manipulating results and were particularly concerned about Ron's wriggling post-incident. The exemplary punishment to the team is a marker to the whole of the grid about the issue of team orders. Ron's face immediately afterward told its own story, and most telling of all, the muted faces of Alonso's team on the television. They knew it stank and couldn't hide the nasty niff. It was cheating on a grand and imperious stage for which history has frequently given harsh penalties. Alonso deserves his.
Ron's face in anger was actually more to do with Hamilton than Alonso. Personally, if I was Ron, I would have smacked Lewis rather than Lewis smacking Alonso. I mean, I just think that's just the ultimate amount of disrespect. Remember what Murray was saying last race about drivers and employees respecting their teams. And I think, you know, Lewis could learn a lot from him. The footage of the team at the end of qualifying did tell a really good story, and their faces were like, oh lordy. But at the same time, I'm not sure it was as in something bad has really happened. I think it was more a case of the atmosphere in this team is going to suck from here on in. This is the tipping point when we can no longer be friends with the guys in the garage next door. Hell is going to break loose from here on in. I don't think it was because their victory was tainted.
The thing is, Ron has to keep Alonso happy because Briatore desperately wants him back, doesn't he?
He does. He does. I mean, he'll do anything to get Alonso back in his team. He still is his manager, and he still smells that there might be a chance that he could get him back in the team.
I mean, the best thing Ron did in 2005, in the whole of 2005, was to sign up Alonso.
Yeah.
It really upset him.
Bit of a coup, wasn't it?
And they don't get along very well, I think it's fair to say, Ron and Briatore. So it's in his interest to support Alonso, just if only to stop him going back to Renault.
Yes.
Hamilton, on the other hand, is a different matter because he's basically signed his life to McLaren. And if they want to stick him on gardening leave for a year, you know, ruin his career, basically, they can do that.
They can. They could stick him in, I don't know, a back-running team like ProDrive for a year if they felt they need to do that.
Yeah, he doesn't really hold a great hand at the moment, does he?
Not really, no. He's not in a wonderful position, and you don't want to upset Ron. I would have one more thing, though. Alonso did do bad at this race, but in his long career, that's a pretty good strike rate for, you know, compared to someone like Schumacher, who regularly did these kind of things. Hopefully, it's the first of not very many. Hamilton's career, though, has only spanned 6 months in Formula 1, and look what he's already done. He showed himself to be ruthless in the same vein that Senna or Schumacher was. He may not be the angel that everyone assumes he is. You know, keep your eye on him. At the risk of upsetting everyone in England and my mum, I'm going to lay the blame for this solely at Hamilton's door. Alonso's was just a reaction to the lack of respect Hamilton showed him in the heat of the moment.
And the stewards announced that Fisichella was put down to 13th as well.
Who? What? Why?
Fisichella, you know, he blocked Yamamoto. Remember, we covered that about 10 hours ago.
Oh, yeah, the runner. Right.
The new grid has Hamilton on pole, Heidfeld is on the dirty side of the grid, whilst Raikkonen is on the clean side, and Kubica is the only one out of the top 10 to actually start where he qualified. It's the first time this season that a non-McLaren or Ferrari has started on the front row.
Interesting fact.
It didn't last long, though, because as the lights went out, Heidfeld had a really poor start, obviously being on the dirty side of the grid, and Raikkonen jumped him into the first corner. It was a clean corner, though. Everyone got through safely. But Alonso, he also lost a couple of places. He went down to 8th, I think.
Playing it a bit safe.
Massa was overtaken by Subaguri down in 14th. Alonso got his places back over the next couple of laps. At the first corner, his overtaking manoeuvres were like perfection.
They were, yeah.
Braking late, taking the inside line, holding it until the next corner and making it stick.
Who said you can't overtake a Hungarian in the dry?
Yamamoto spun off to retire.
That didn't last long, did it?
Alonso got stuck behind Ralf Schumacher, whilst Hamilton and Raikkonen were trading fastest laps.
Schumacher was actually having a pretty good race.
Well, he was holding Alonso up.
Well, yeah, there's a bit of, you know, he obviously picked the wrong race to have a good one, but unusually for him, he was doing better than Trulli, and he wasn't going too badly.
Kovalainen seemed to favour the super soft tyres, whilst everyone else hated them. when he went in for his first pit stop, he stayed on the super softs. It looked like he had a broken nose cone. It had a hole in it. But they didn't change it in the stop, and no one said anything about it, so can't have been anything major.
Nothing in the post-race press release either, so no idea what happened. Didn't see him touch anyone. Didn't seem to hurt his performance either.
Massa was absolutely full of fuel. He made it to lap 35, which is exactly halfway through the race, before he had to pit.
So now we know how big his fuel tank is then.
Button retired, pulled off the track on the inside. He couldn't cross the track to get back to the pit, so he had to sit and watch the rest of the race.
There wasn't a single bridge?
Apparently not.
Oh dear.
Davidson and Fisichella bashed together.
Yeah, they were. I think they were racing out of the pits, actually. They weren't coming. They were sort of coming out of the pit lane together, went into the first corner a bit hot, got a bit ragged, and sort of clumped into each other. They both called it a racing incident. Sadly, Davidson came off worse, but I think Fisichella had a damaged car too.
Davidson spun around and ended up with his nose sticking right out on the track.
Nearly was a safety car situation, yeah. But the marshals did a good job to kind of keep it off the racing line.
Liuzzi retired to the pits with electrical problems, but I should point out that Vettel was ahead of him before Liuzzi retired. So it's not a dazzling start, but it's good for the Toro Rosso team. Alonso managed to jump Schumacher in the second round of pit stops, and because Rosberg and Kubica were three stopping, Alonso managed to move up to fourth.
Very good team strategy from the McLaren guys. You know, after the French race, when Alonso battled all the way to the front, passed loads of cars, only to find himself behind them all again after a couple of stops. I think they did. You know, they learned from that and they got it right this race.
In the last 12 or so laps, it looked like there were two good scraps going on. Alonso catching Heidfeld for third and Raikkonen catching Hamilton for the lead, but absolutely nothing happened on either. Raikkonen seemed to back off a bit when there were only a couple of laps to go. Barrichello was dead last, which is awful. By the end of the race, he was two laps down on the leaders. Adrian Sutil was chuffed to have beaten a Honda.
Stop the presses. Oh my God, that car can't get any worse, can it? First it's beaten by the Superguri, now it's beaten by the orange thing.
The top eight finishing positions: Hamilton, then Raikkonen, Heidfeld, Alonso, Kubica, Schumacher, Rosberg and Kovalainen. So the Drivers' Championship has Hamilton on 80 and Alonso on 73. Raikkonen overtakes Massa again on 60, Massa on 59, Heidfeld on 42. The Constructors' Championship has McLaren on 153, pending the appeal. If they lose that, it could still be 138 points. Ferrari are on 119, BMW 71, Renault 33, and Williams on 20. So it was actually quite a dull race after all the excitement.
You didn't really live up to qualifying, did it? I mean, how could it? But yeah, it was a predictable Hungarian Grand Prix.
At the end, when Hamilton won, is it important that Ron didn't congratulate him?
It's significant. Normally, or at least in the last two cases when Hamilton's won a race, Ron's straight on the radio after the engineer congratulating his driver. This week, nothing.
And Hamilton was also told, "You're on air." And then we didn't hear a word from Hamilton.
Absolute silence. Wall of silence from him.
McLaren weren't allowed on the podium as constructors.
Yeah, there was a bit of fuss about that. Not really sure. I guess that kind of makes sense that they can go up there. I'm not sure anyone really thought it through until the race was halfway kind of complete when they suddenly thought, hold on, McLaren actually might win this.
Where was Massa?
Who knows? Was he still going around? I didn't see him at the end.
Yeah.
Where did he finish?
No idea. 14th or something like that.
That's useless compared to... I mean, he did the same thing at Silverstone. Obviously, it's easier to overtake at Silverstone. He had one of the fastest cars on the grid and he got nowhere.
Well, he was stuck behind Super Guri for ages, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think it jumped him at the start and he probably wasn't expecting that. And then it was fueled quite heavy. But he should have been able to beat that in a Ferrari.
So Kimi's the number one driver this week then?
And going forward, you'd have to assume. Do you think Massa's championship campaign is going to come into an abrupt halt?
Well, he's only 1 point behind, but it's not looking good.
It's not even for the long term, is it? I mean, you wouldn't put your money behind that guy.
Red Bull did not have any gearbox problems at all.
Not incredible. Any of the four cars. The seamless shift, presumably they were still running that thing, and it held up pretty well.
Both Red Bull drivers finished, and the Toro Rosso, they suffered electrical problems for Lietzi. Woohoo for the gearbox. Spiker is the worst car in the pit lane. I mean, that's not being mean. Ian Phillips actually said that himself.
Yeah, he should know. He's from Spiker. And if he says it's the worst car, it is.
And they beat Honda. I just think they ought to give up right now.
Do you reckon they should just skip the next race?
Yeah.
So don't come back until you've got something worthy of the name.
For whatever reason, Martin Brundle misses the Hungarian Grand Prix again.
Every year?
They say it's usual, but I've only seen it for 2 years.
So I think it's happened more than that. I don't know where he goes. I presume he's just banned from the country. Maybe they don't like him. Go away with your silly grid walks. Don't ever darken his doors again.
Last year, they had Anthony Davidson commentating for ITV.
Who did a really good job. And
brilliant.
That's actually award-winning commentator, Anthony Davidson.
This year, they had Damon Hill. And, you know, you kind of expect a certain standard from a driver who should know what they're talking about.
Well, Martin Brundle does a pretty good job.
Exactly. Damon Hill, not so much.
He hopeless? Would that be a fair description?
I don't think that's harsh enough.
He didn't really inspire you to listen to him, did you? I mean, you'd have thought, you know, when James Allen said, and we're going to go on board with this car and, you know, let Damon talk us through the lap. Nothing.
He said, that car's got lots of knobs on it. I wouldn't know what to do with any of those.
This guy's won this race twice. You'd have thought he could give you some kind of insight as what it's like to be a racing driver around here. How it feels, what the apex is like, what the speed is like, what the sensation is like.
No. I mean, it's bad when you're thinking, shut up, Damon Hill, let James Allen speak. So, post-race news, the Spanish Motorsport Federation, RFEA, they're not happy about Fernando's drop. Kind of obvious, but the thing is, they've never said anything before.
That's his five-place grid drop at the beginning. They're objecting to that, are they?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they've never said a word before old Luigi Mascarpone opened his mouth last week, didn't they?
That's the thing.
Suddenly, all these, you know, international racing authorities suddenly think they have a lot to say for themselves, which is great.
They said, and I quote, "The RFEA will show its most vigorous protest to the international bodies responsible for this decision, and it will take all the available measures to clear up this conflict. We want to publicly show our support and absolute trust in Fernando Alonso."
Are they going to send a fax to Max as well?
Yes.
Oh, it's going to go on for a week. We're going to be doing another podcast next week, and it's just going to be more flipping faxes to the FIA. That's all it's going to be. That's the rest of this championship. That's all we've got to look forward to. More paper, more faxes.
So that's it for our Hungarian race review. Thank you to everyone that called in to the Skype number and left us messages. We love to play them. So if any of you have got opinions on Ron Dennis, Fernando Alonso, and Lewis Hamilton, I know you all do. So don't pretend you don't.
I'll tell you something. There's so much chatter going on the forums and on the blog, and I'll tell you the problem with these things. You can't really express, you know, when you get to a situation like this, when something really big happens, you really want to express your opinion. All you can do on text comments and stuff is just type in uppercase. That's it. That's shouting, and that's as good as you can get. Phone us up and really tell us how you feel. You know, if you're angry, if you're frustrated, if you're sad, give us all your opinions on the FAA spy scandal, on the Alonso Hamilton thing, anything that's happened over the last week. Please give us a ring. Please tell us what you think. We want to hear it. We want to be able to play it on the show and to hear how people are feeling, because you can't do that with ITV. You can't do that with anyone else. Phone us up. Let us hear what you're thinking.
012128 track, which is 012128872225. Formula One racing takes a break for a couple of weeks now. You can guarantee there'll be plenty of news to talk about, though, so we'll be back next week.
Before we go, can I just leave you with one quote that was actually said earlier this week by ex-McLaren driver Mika Häkkinen. This was completely before the whole thing blew up over the weekend. And he was talking about Ron Dennis's handling of McLaren's inter-driver rivalry. He says, "I think he's using his experience with Fernando and Lewis to the maximum level he can. I don't think it will become a problem."